I love it though, I love it though, you know? Put your hands to the constellations. The way you look should be a sin, you my sensation. I know I'm preaching to the congregation. We love Jesus, but you done learned a lot from Satan.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Season 4, Episode 4 of Power T Talk. We recorded our draft episode and got that up for y'all. Now we're going to kind of get in the nitty-gritty of these conferences a little more. This fourth episode is going to be a Big Ten preview and a Big 12 preview. Decided to keep those conferences together. Today we're going to talk about the favorites in the conferences, some of our favorite players from each of these conferences, sort of the shifting in these conferences, and some teams that have struggled in the past few years in these conferences, and whether or not they can get back to where they need to be. Zach, how are you doing?
Doing well. Got a lot of content for you guys here with all the preview episodes that we're doing. We're planning on releasing three previews this week. The draft. This is our Big Ten, Big 12 preview. Not Tennessee-centric. We've already talked about the Kirkland injury in the draft. Any other Tennessee news we bring up, you know, if we miss it this week, we'll discuss on next week. But I'm pretty excited here. Big Ten, we are a little bit more emotionally invested in than maybe some other people are.
Yeah, so we tried to come up with the big questions for these conferences, and for the Big Ten, there's some important ones, but I think like the underlying thing is that Zach's family's from Michigan. He's been a Michigan fan for a while. I never was an Ohio State fan, but I've been here 2 years and 2 weeks now, and I really like Columbus, and I like Ohio State. I've had an awesome time here. So that's kind of underlying what's going on when we talk about this Big Ten preview, and we're going to pick a conference winner. So that's going to kind of come to the forefront of this Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. But I think the first question is, thinking about the Big Ten, is Penn State for real? Like, we haven't seen a team in a while come on the way they did. And I think a lot of people, even as they were doing it, were thinking it was fluky. But then you look at their roster and they bring a lot of guys back. They're pretty good. They lost a big-time receiver in Chris Godwin. He's with the Bucs now. He's making some noise in the preseason. He caught everything that came his way, it seemed like. But that was the only guy they lost that was drafted. So is this team for real?
Daniel, I think part of it is because I just don't like James Franklin at all. Makes me want to say no. But, I mean, the way they played USC, the fact they beat Ohio State last year, and, you know, Pitt was a pretty decent team. I mean, they returned 17 starters on this team. Really the only big off – they only lost one offensive guy in Chris Godwin, and they have Deshaun Hamilton, who's probably going to be able to replace that production. It's – I mean, you've got to think they're a 10-win team. They do have a little bit of a tough schedule, but I really think they can win 10 games and be in playoff contention.
Yeah, so they keep – the two big guys. They keep McSorley and they keep Barkley. Barkley was one of the best running backs in the country last year. He really kind of surgically kept them in the game against USC in that bowl game. He catches the ball. He makes ridiculous runs. He breaks tackles. He has great balance. Then you have McSorley, who was kind of the guy who was suddenly a great quarterback. He threw 29 touchdowns. He had 8 interceptions, but he also ran for 5 touchdowns. So he's mobile. He moves around in the pocket even before he makes these big throws. And then kind of the ancillary guys on offense that they keep, you mentioned Deshaun Hamilton. He's a bigger guy. He had 500 receiving yards last year. They keep Saeed Blackwell, who's 6'3", 200 plus, and they keep Mike Gesicki, who's 6'6", 260, has wonderful hands. He had over 50 catches a year ago at a tight end position. I think the offense is still going to be really good. I think McSorley's good. I don't think it was all fluky. I don't know if he'll connect on as many long passes, but they have guys who can catch the ball, and they can always just turn around and feed it to Barkley.
Well, and last year, you know, I don't think they had a great offensive line. McSorley got beat up. Barkley made a lot of stuff happen. But really, when you look at that offensive line, they return all 5 starters. This year, they're going to have 2 seniors and a junior on that line. That experience is going to help them. You really got to think at this point that Penn State is probably one of the favorites. I think they're a legit top 10 team. I don't have a problem with them in the top 10. I don't know if it's going to last. I'll put it this way. If Penn State ended up winning only 7 or 8 games, it wouldn't shock me, though. I still don't know if the talent level... I know Franklin's done a pretty good job recruiting. I still don't know if the talent level is at on par with Michigan and Ohio State, though.
Yeah, so I think I want to talk about that, and then we can talk about the schedule and what the season actually looks like. So first, the good is that, I mean, they have a first-team or second-team conference quarterback. They have the best running back in the conference. They have the best tight end in the conference. They have Ryan Bates, who was a freshman all-conference O-lineman. So they return a lot of guys in the O-line, and one of them might be a really standout. You're going to be in the mix when you have that. You have those guys. But then you brought the question up to me. Do they have enough defensively? They lost Garrett Sickles. They lost Evan Schwann. They lost Nassib the year before. So they've kind of lost defensive pressure guys recently. They have a guy named Kevin Givens who might provide a spark. He had 5 sacks as a freshman, sort of a defensive end, defensive tackle hybrid. He's shorter, but he's a big guy. And are we at the point? So I think coming into last year when they lost the pass rushers and they lost Shoup, my thought was, okay, that crazy pass rush that they had is going to be gone and that's really going to hurt their defense. Well, okay, then they had guys who are now going to the league as defensive ends. They might be at a point now where they just kind of produce these pretty good defensive linemen. They might have enough defensively up front if they've just become this factory of 5th to 7th round pick guys who show out in college.
Yeah, I don't know if they have Anthony Zettel, another guy. I know him because he plays for the Lions. I don't know if there's enough up front. They have the Cothran brothers. Looking here, I think their names are Parker and Curtis. Yes, they are. They're up there on that defensive tackle. They're kind of smaller. I don't think they have a starting defensive lineman over 300 pounds. You know you're going to get good linebacker play. They got in a big-time freshman, Lamont Wade, in the secondary. Marcus Allen's one of the best safeties in the country. So I think they do have the defensive talent to hold up in their starting 11. If people get hurt, if they suffer injuries, though, that's where it could be really dangerous.
Yeah, like Kevin Givens provided that spark last year as a guy off the bench who picked his spots and got 5 sacks. If they lose one of those twin defensive tackles, or if they lose one of the more experienced guys, and suddenly Givens, who's a little bit of a tweener, is playing defensive tackle for them against these big Big Ten teams, I think that's when they struggle, and that's when we start to look at the schedule. They have the 55th ranked schedule in the country. They get Michigan at home, and they play at Iowa, at Nebraska. I think the biggest thing, so they have Pitt in a rivalry game. They play at Northwestern. They play at Indiana. These aren't gimmies by any means. But the biggest stretch is they play Michigan, and they play a vengeful Ohio State in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see. This is what I'm curious about. They've got a tough schedule. I mean, at Iowa is not an easy game. Going into Kinnick is a tough game. Pittsburgh, Pat Narduzzi game plans as well as anybody in the country. That's not going to be easy. They have a game plan that can affect Penn State in multiple ways. They'll slow the game down. They'll run the ball. They'll get after the quarterback. So, you know, you look at that schedule, I don't think it's a guarantee that Penn State can automatically go ahead and assume and write it down. We'll talk about Michigan State in a minute. They've got to go play at Michigan State, too.
Yeah, so they have tough road games. And then when they play Michigan and they play Ohio State, I mean, those are the teams that are gunning for the crown. I think it's going to be tough. I think they're really talented. And we're going to talk about who the second best team is, and we'll come back to the Penn State, Michigan type conversation. But there's a lot of talent on this roster, and that's the first thing I notice when I look, is they have first team all conference guys, and that's what you want. And then when we think about switching gears a little bit, and we'll come back to Penn State, when we think about Michigan State, who you just mentioned, if Michigan State's going to be a tough game for them, they're going to have to play a little bit better than they did last year. Can they recover from a 3-9 record? They don't have a lot returning. That could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing. But they lost some talented players. what do you see in Michigan State this year? This has suddenly gone from perennial conference contender to will D'Antonio be on the hot seat?
I don't see much. I mean, they don't really have any playmakers at all, Daniel. They don't have an answer at quarterback. Their offensive line, they have Brian Allen, who's really good, but not really any consistent answers at the offensive line. It just feels like there's a downturn. And I thought D'Antonio was doing a good job recruiting, but I don't see a lot of NFL talent. I don't see a ton of depth. The fact they don't have an answer at quarterback is a huge concern. It just feels like Michigan State at this point is kind of stuck in a rut, and I don't know. I mean, D'Antonio's a really good football coach, but it might be another year or two before they get back to where they were.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one of those teams. It's in the same – it might be in the same category as, like, an Indiana where you might make some noise and you might play spoiler for a game or two with somebody, but you're not going out there and getting favored in every game, whereas I think Michigan – Wisconsin, Ohio State, Penn State. I think those four teams are going to be favored against. I think there's a drop off after those, and I think Michigan State's in that category. LJ Scott is a workhorse. He's big. You can turn around and hand the ball to him. But they lost RJ Shelton. They lost Josiah Price, and Donnie Corley was dismissed from the team. That's 124 catches, 1,600 yards. Corley was a freshman. He was dismissed for sexual allegations. D'Antonio dismissed him right away, said, it's not about the outcome of this investigation. He's gone from this team, which I commend him for, but that was his freshman dynamic playmaker. And now their leading returning wide receiver is Felton Davis, who had 150 yards receiving last year, and they don't have a quarterback.
Not only that, they're planning on playing a freshman and two true sophomores on the offensive line who aren't returning. So as starters, it's going to be a tough road. Brian Lucree is probably going to be the guy at quarterback. I think that's not going to be an easy fix for them at all. Defensively, there's not a lot. I like Chris Frey. He's really good at the linebacker spot. Mm-hmm, Demetrius Cooper, you know, has had a ton of potential, hasn't lived up to it yet. But there isn't that much defensively either.
Yeah, we like Mark D'Antonio. I like Michigan State, but they beat Notre Dame, Rutgers, and Furman last year, and that is not good. That is, I mean, almost anybody in the country could have beaten those three teams last year, and they lost every other game, and you just kind of sit back and look at, like, are they better? Can you say that they're better than Northwestern? Can you say that they're better than Minnesota? Can you say that they're better than Indiana? And you don't feel comfortable with it. Like, that game at a neutral site, I would like to pick Michigan State because I'm a little bit biased towards them, but I don't know if that's based on the roster or just based on a lot of faith in D'Antonio, who relies on his defense, but he just lost Malik McDowell, and he doesn't have the superstar safeties that he usually does. There's a lot there that could put them with a losing record again.
Yeah, they had four losses last year that were more than 14 points.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they played Michigan and Ohio State super close, but they got blown out by Wisconsin. BYU blew them out. They gave 54 points to Northwestern.
Jesus.
That's not good at all. Penn State beat them by 30-something points, I think 33 to be exact. So it's not exactly, you know, a situation where they just got super unlucky and lost seven close games. This was a team that did not play well last year. If you look at the raw numbers for them, too, it's not like there was anything there, at least for me, that impressed me, looking over the rankings and everything.
So real quick, and then we'll go to the next segment, which is a little bit more positive. If they have another season like that, maybe not a 3-9, but they don't get to a bowl, is Mark D'Antonio on the hot seat for you?
I think he would have to be, especially with the way Michigan's recruiting and Harbaugh. You know, he's going to continue to recruit well. You look at Urban Meyer, you know, they're going to have a top 10 program. You look at what Penn State has done recently. And I think Indiana's got a good football program. If Tom Allen can continue what Kevin Wilson did there, you know, that's a pretty good team. DJ Durkin got Maryland to a bowl last year. This is not exactly an easy conference in division either.
So when we talk about those teams that are probably above Michigan State, which is why D'Antonio would be on the hot seat. Who is the second best team? And we're kind of operating under the assumption that just based on the roster that Urban has put together, they're the favorite to win the conference. They didn't win it last year. They got in the playoff anyway. They got shut out by Clemson. It's the first time Urban had ever been shut out. Some ups and downs offensively since Tom Herman has gone elsewhere. But I think they're the favorite going into the season. They have a lot of talent, especially on the defensive line, even after losing guys to the NFL. Who's your second best team in this conference?
So if you want to say Penn State, I would agree with that. I don't have a problem. They have the returning quarterback. They have Saquon Barkley, who's probably the best player in the Big Ten. They have 17 starters returning. I don't have a problem with Penn State there, but I think people are thinking Michigan is in trouble, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. Michigan has recruited well 3 out of the last 4 years. They've got a returning quarterback. Wilton Spate's going to be the quarterback. He's a good player. He can throw the ball down the field. Chris Evans, Donovan Peoples-Jones, a couple young guys, playmakers there. They return a couple starters on the offensive line. I think they return 3, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So, 2, they had another guy that got Grant Newsom's not playing this year, so he would have been the 3rd. But really, they've got a good team. I think they can definitely compete. If Ohio State can't fix their offense, maybe they could sneak one in Ann Arbor. They got to go to, you know, State College. That's going to be a tough one, but they might be able to win 10 games and sneak into the Big Ten. I still would say Penn State's slightly ahead of Michigan, but I don't think Michigan's exactly going to be down. I don't think they're going to have a 6 or 7 win season. I think they can win 9 games easy.
So, yeah, they get Ohio State at home, and they are going to be thirsty in that game. And I think the good thing about that is that there's time for some of the younger guys to come along, and that's going to be really important because they are relying on some youth. They do go to Penn State, and they go to Wisconsin, and those teams aren't going to fall off completely. I don't know. With Michigan, I trust Harbaugh, and I especially trust him when he has kind of found a quarterback and he's got that quarterback into his system. He can turn around and hand the ball to Chris Evans. Harbaugh working with quarterbacks is great. They lost 11 players to the NFL. I mean, that is a lot, and 8 of those were on defense. But then you look, and they still have Gary, who I think is going to be a monster. They still have Maurice Hurst. And they lost 3 games by a total of 5 points, and that counts the bowl game. I mean, they were really close to being one of the best teams in the country. Who knows how they would have fared in the playoffs, but if they were coming off maybe an undefeated season or close to it, I still think we'd notice the people leaving, but I think that people found a reason to really think Michigan is going to fall off completely this year. And like, yeah, I'm sitting here at Ohio State. I'm a mile from the campus. I'm happy to make that case. But people can't forget how good of a coach Harbaugh is. And I think that you've pointed out to me, and I'm glad you did, Chris Evans is a dynamic running back, and he's probably not as good as Barkley. He might not be as good as Mike Weber, but Harbaugh is always going to have a good O-line, and Chris Evans is a superstar if everything clicks.
Yeah, he had 614 yards on 88 attempts last year.
Yeah, like he's a monster, and he's going to carry the load.
Yeah, he definitely is. He's a guy who can make people miss. He's tough. I mean, I could make the argument that if Wilton Spate didn't get hurt and didn't hurt his shoulder last year, that Michigan would have faced Alabama for the national title. I think that's a fair argument. And I know I'm a little biased there, but I don't think that's a huge stretch. And you look at what the other, like, so Michigan only returns 1 starter on defense, Mike McRae, who's really good. But think about this. Chase Winovich played a lot. Rashawn Gary played a lot. Maurice Hurst is not considered a returning starter, and he's on All-American list. Devin Bush played a lot. So these guys have a lot of experience. Michigan blew so many teams out that these guys got a lot of experience. I am highly concerned about the secondary. I don't
lost,
know the
talent. Lost a really good corner.
Yeah, they lost Jordan Lewis. They lost Jabril Peppers, obviously. So I'm concerned about the secondary, but I think their offense is going to be better this year.
The leading returning receiver, I'm pretty sure, is Khalid Hill, which is a little bit concerning.
Grant Perry too. But they've got some guys. They got Eddie McDoom, Grant Perry's good. Yeah, Grant Perry. Donovan Peoples-Jones was a 5-star wide receiver. So there's options there. I'm not too concerned, honestly, about that. Wide receiver's pretty easy to replace.
Yeah, and especially in a system like Harbaugh's where he relies so much on, like, timing of play action, getting the run game going. The receivers, I think, can come along and be okay. They just have to catch the freaking ball so you can stay ahead of the chains.
Yeah.
Quickly, I want to give a little shout out to Wisconsin. They were absolute monsters on defense last year. A lot of the stuff I've read in the preseason thinks people are expecting more of the same. They're saying the loss of this guy doesn't matter, the loss of that guy doesn't matter. I actually disagree. I'm not saying that they're going to fall off completely, but losing Watt matters. He was one of the most athletic guys in the country. He's one of the best defenders in the country. He had a crazy amount of tackles for loss. He was so disruptive. I mean, I don't see how you can say that doesn't matter. You can have a lot of faith in Wisconsin, but they lost guys on defense. They lost Corey Clement. They lost a first-round offensive lineman. And I know that they churned those guys out, but I think they're potentially below the Penn State and Michigan. I think the debate is between, does Michigan keep it rolling? Is Penn State able to be a little bit better? And then Wisconsin's right below that. Granted, people were saying that last year, and Wisconsin was in the mix the entire season.
The problem with Wisconsin is I don't know if they have the quarterback.
I don't have a lot of faith in their guy.
Not completely sold on Alex Hornibrook, and there's not a lot behind him either.
Yeah, so they just have to have that defense be so good, and you're losing 16 tackles for loss, 12 sacks, and T.J. Watt, and that's not easy to replace. No matter how good you churn those guys out. And I think that kind of turns us to who are your favorite players. So we've talked about Penn State. We've talked a lot about Michigan. There are stars on both of those teams. I'm obviously an Ohio State fan. You're a Michigan fan. There are some guys beyond that, but that's where some of the stars reside. Who are your favorite players in this conference? Let's just kind of stream of consciousness, have a conversation about who we think are the NFL dudes in this conference.
So I love Troy Fumagalli. We talked about him on the draft episode, Daniel. Mm-hmm. Great blocker. Big target, great pass catcher. He dominated the Western Michigan game. I mean, it's Western Michigan, so it should be taken granted on, but he ran away from their secondary. He's got really good speed, 6'5 target. I think he's got NFL tight end written all over him. I also like Rodney Smith, running back from Minnesota, 16 touchdowns, kind of a power back. I think he could carve out a nice NFL career as a third and goal linebacker. He's got a little bit of shiftiness to him. I really like him too. PJ Fleck is going to really like him.
Yeah, and the guy I picked was also a running back, and I ended up taking him as my bonus offensive guy in our draft. So I had Cam Petway at running back, and I said, you know what? I need a guy who can catch the ball, and I got Justin Jackson. He ran for over 1,500 yards last year. It wasn't all volume because he averaged 5 yards per carry. He had 15 touchdowns. He'll be a senior this year. Northwestern has somehow reemerged as a solid football program. And on top of everything, Jackson caught over 30 balls last year out of the backfield. Really dynamic player. I don't know if he's in the category of, you know, Saquon or even Mike Weber. We'll see how Weber emerges. But I really like Justin Jackson. Are there any other guys on either side of the ball that you really think are going to emerge this year?
Yeah, I really like Maryland linebacker. I really like Jermaine Carter Jr., middle linebacker. He's a rare middle linebacker. Actually kind of reminds me a little of Leonard Little, who can also rush the passer. 110 tackles, 6 sacks, 9 tackles for loss, 4 pass breakups. He's kind of a little bit of a smaller guy, but he can really make moves there. At 6 feet, 240, they put him on the end on third downs. He's really fun to watch. I think he could be really good. And I kind of like watching him there. I also think Rashawn Gary from Michigan is going to have a monster year. I think he's got first-round pick written all over him.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. He's one that you were like, is he really that? Like, I was thinking, like, God, is he really that good? And then he is absolutely living up to the hype. I wrote down Rashawn Gary and Nick Bosa are both going to emerge this year. So Gary's going to play right away. Bosa is still fighting for playing time, and he didn't come in and have the immediate success that Gary had, but he still ended up with 7 tackles for loss and 5 sacks last year. I mean, he's obviously got like the Joey Bosa hype that has got him on campus, but he's doing it on his own. He's kind of making a name for himself already around here. People love him. I don't know if he's quite as good as Gary because Gary is simultaneously bigger and probably faster, but if he's anything like Joey Bosa, he's a little bit undersized, but you can't block the guy. He's so active with his hands. I think especially if those two teams are kind of on a crash course for a big matchup in Ann Arbor, those two guys are going to emerge. I really think so.
Just a couple guys I like that I wrote down that didn't really talk about very much. Maybe don't have NFL potential, but I really like Sean Welsh, the right guard at Iowa. Think he's a true road grader, big ugly maul you guy. I also like watching Richard Legault, quarterback for Indiana, play because he just throws the ball downfield whenever he wants. And I have a soft spot for quarterbacks that are in the 20s for their number.
I like it. I like it.
So those are a couple of guys I got there.
Is there a favorite underclassman of yours or a favorite recruit? I think we need to pick a winner for the conference, but before that, who are the young guys that you think – I mean, Gary's young, Bose is young, but who are the young guys that maybe came in that huge Michigan recruiting class or anybody that you think is going to just explode onto the scene this year in the Big Ten?
Chris Perry, I really think he's going to have a monster year. You know, he's kind of the obvious choice, but, I mean, he's the easy choice also. I mean, I think he's got a chance to be – I don't think he'll go to New York, don't get me wrong, but I think he's got a chance to be all-team first Big Ten with Barkley or Jackson. I really do.
Yeah, I could absolutely see it. I think he's going to have room to run, and he's really good. I think – you said Chris Perry, by the way.
Well, I mean, I was kind of – I mean, this is an old Michigan running back. I mean,
exactly.
You know?
A little flashback.
Yeah, a little flashback. I think John Navarre or Braylon Edwards, right? yeah, Chris Evans, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think he's going to be – have a monster year. It wouldn't shock me at all. I think a guy that will probably start from day one, he's an offensive lineman. We got to give respect to the big uglies there. I'm going to go Kevin Jarvis at Michigan State. I think he starts from day one, plays for them.
The guy I picked, and once I started looking at the numbers on Chris Evans, I realized just how much of a battle it might be for these guys on some first team lists in the future. Mike Weber had over 1,000 yards last year as a freshman at Ohio State. He's good in pass protection, and I think a lot of that comes from being able to wait a year before he got thrown into the scheme.
Right, yeah.
He got to sit behind Ezekiel Elliott and watch that. And again, if they don't get their offense going, I'm not sure what's going to happen. But they can turn around and hand it to Weber. He's dynamic. He's not nearly as big as Chris Evans. So if I were picking one, I really like Evans, and he averaged 7.5 yards a touch last year.
Yeah.
But Weber had over 1,000 yards. He's already kind of carrying the load there.
Kind of interesting to watch former he was a Tennessee recruit, had Tennessee in his final three or five. I'm kind of interested to see Lamont Wade, who went to Penn State. A lot of big-time potential from him.
Yeah. And then another guy – just thinking about how people talk around this campus, we have a left guard at Ohio State named Michael Jordan who played last year as a freshman, but he absolutely took his licks. So some of the games where the offense struggled, he kind of got exposed.
Right.
But sometimes those guys come back and they actually are good, and that's why they were able to play as a freshman. So there are a lot of young guys to watch. And then we have, like, on the other hand, the guys like Fumagalli, Justin Jackson, who are just going to carry this conference, and they're going to be really good again. So if we're thinking about who might end up in the playoff, rather than just pick the four teams, we're going to kind of pick conference champions and think about who we think is going to win. Who do you think is going to win the Big Ten?
I'm going to go with Ohio State, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's you're almost like forcing yourself to choose something else at this point. They're really good. They're still deep despite losing some guys. The front seven is going to be just an absolute terror. And then I think the Penn State game last year was a little fluky, even though I give them credit for making plays. There was a pass interference call that was a little bit ridiculous, and then Ohio State obviously messed up the kick. But I think it's going to be hard for Penn State to beat them 2 years in a row. If they do, then I think you get into the same interesting thing where it's Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State all right there.
What's going to – the one concern for Ohio State is Penn State loves to throw the ball deep, and they lose Lattimore, they lose Conley, they lose Hooker.
Yep.
And that could really affect them. The other thing to consider, too, is they play Oklahoma that second game. It's going to be interesting to see if the secondary is going to be ready. I mean, I'm sure the talent's not going to be the issue. They have Jeffrey Okuda, who's a five-star, who's probably going to play some from day one. He was an early enrollee. So, I mean, he's probably going to make an impact, but replacing three top 60 picks like that, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome what Urban's doing as far as the talent he's bringing in. But at a certain point, if things just don't click the right way, you have a down year. I mean, they had to replace Michael Thomas, and then Noah Brown came in and did a really good job, but Noah Brown left. And so just at a certain point, the losing that many guys is simultaneously awesome, but it also means that these young guys aren't always going to be there. So they have secondary to replace, they have receivers to replace, but just the talent on the roster, they're the favorites right now. I don't think it's by any means they'll run through the conference without any sort of scare. So it's still going to be interesting, but they're the most talented roster and one of the most talented rosters in the country.
Yeah, I think Michigan's got a chance if Wilton Spate steps up and they can find somebody in the secondary, maybe Ohio State. Urban better hope Kevin Wilson's the answer. The offense is disappointed the last few years.
Yep.
Since Herman left. I think Kevin Wilson's a great play caller, but they definitely need to be better down the field throwing.
They've just been stagnant at times. I don't think people around here are incredibly confident, but the roster, you can just kind of throw the roster out there and say, hey, look, but nobody feels super confident about the offense. I can tell you that. And again, Harbaugh with a running back and a quarterback that he's gotten to mold, that's a dangerous thing if things come together. Going on to the Big 12, we kind of want to roll through these. The Big 12 has been a weird conference recently. There's been Oklahoma has kind of just been at the top, but suddenly out of nowhere, Oklahoma loses Bob Stoops. They have a really young coach, still a talented roster. But then you introduce Tom Herman at Texas, which people were sort of talking about in the distance for a while. Now he's there. They got their man, so to speak. Can Tom Herman win championships at Texas? Is he worth the year and a half long worth of hype that Texas fans were talking about him?
Probably. But I'm very concerned with the fact that he had four, and I know he's at Houston, but Houston was basically a top 25 program. I was there. They had four non-top 25 losses. You just kind of look, and I mean, yeah, you say, yeah, they beat Oklahoma. Yeah, they beat Florida State. But it's concerning that he had the issues that he did at Houston, defense inconsistent. Sometimes Greg Ward looked confused passing the ball, and they sometimes didn't even look prepared.
Yeah, he's one of those that, when you think about, like, I'm not criticizing the hire by any means, because there was clearly some weird stuff going on with Charlie Strong and boosters, and it was probably time to move on from that. And I don't blame Texas fans for being excited about Herman. Like, who else would you have wanted? But I think there is a little bit of, like, only remembering the good, like the win versus Oklahoma or the win versus Florida State, and kind of forgetting the bad. Like, they did lose to Navy last year. They did lose to SMU last year. And those kind of happened sandwiched between winning against Oklahoma and winning against Louisville, both big wins. And so people kind of forget, and then he moves on to Texas. So when you think about, okay, who else could we have had? Herman's the guy you want. I mean, that was obvious from the beginning of the year when they beat Oklahoma. That's who they wanted. They got their man. We just talked about the Ohio State offense. It hasn't been the same since Herman left Columbus. So that matters. But I don't know if it's impossible to know if these guys are absolutely no doubt we're back at Texas championship level type coaches.
Exactly. I mean, he's going to recruit. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you even saw that at Houston. He's going to recruit there. But it was interesting. Texas offense was really good last year. They had a top 50 offense, even better at some parts. I mean, they had one of the best running backs in the country, and Dante Foreman. Really, the issue was their defense. They were 105th defense in passing last year. So, I mean, they basically hired an offensive guy when they really needed to improve the defense, kind of like LSU did.
And he's the sexy hire. He's probably one of the sexiest hires we've had in years. But, I mean, how long is he going to get before people start to cool on him? Because in my opinion, he has the quarterback in place. He probably has some of the offensive line in place. He has 10 returning starters on defense. Obviously, it's a defense that struggled, but he's not coming into a bare cupboard. And if Baylor's out of the picture, Texas A&M, if they continue to not live up to the height, he's going to out-recruit them. They have to replace Dante Foreman, but they have a lot of these pieces, and they have some decent wide receivers. he should be able to hit the ground running, and I don't know how long the honeymoon period is going to last if he has an average season.
What's going to help him is he's a better cultural fit.
Yeah.
Without trying to just get too political, he's a better cultural fit there. He's probably going to, you know, glad hand with boosters more. He's probably going to be willing to play that game more than Charlie Strong was. So that's going to be better for him. I think he will recruit like a madman. He already, think, has like a top 10 class so far. And what's going to help him is he's got a good quarterback coming back in Shane Buechele, who had a great year last year, and he's got 2 years with him. So that's going to be super helpful also.
Yeah, they have the number two class in the country right now, so he has got the Texas recruiting up to speed pretty quickly. The sneaky little thing is they don't have the easiest schedule in the world. I mean, they always have the Red River rivalry. They play Oklahoma State at home. They have to go to West Virginia, which won't be a cakewalk. But early in the season, they go at USC, and if he gets blown out and the defense looks terrible and Buechele can't get anything going, I don't know if there are going to be whispers or there's going to be patience, but it's not a cakewalk schedule. And if he loses at USC, loses to Oklahoma, and then loses one of OK State and West Virginia, I think people are going to be left a little bit wanting more. But, I mean, he's going to have plenty of time to get it rolling.
That's the thing that's going to hurt him, I think, is he's going to have very little patience from the fan base with this immediate success he brought to Houston, combined with the fact that Charlie Strong did bring in some talented players, Malik Jefferson, Connor Williams, Boucher, who we've talked about here, Buechele. You know, he's got some talented players. I'm thinking of Chris Warren III, too. It's a pretty talented running back. So there's talent there. The question's going to be, can he win immediately? Can he adapt a little bit offensively there? And, you know, can Todd Orlando, the defensive coordinator, get the job done?
Yeah, one of the most interesting things to me is Foreman was an absolute monster. Chris Warren is another big back that can run downhill, but Chris Warren's hurt right now. So he was hurt all offseason, and then I think right now he might be suffering some concussion things from camp. If he's not playing, I mean, they're Texas. They're going to have some sort of running back, but they really need somebody to just let Buechele come on a little slower, not put everything on him right away. Then again, we know Herman's an offensive genius. We mm-hmm. really do. And he might have Buechele just ready to rock and roll.
So let me put you on the spot real quick before we move on. Todd Herman will make an appearance in the playoff with the University of Texas. True or false?
I'm going to say false.
I'm going to say true just because I think he'll recruit well enough.
And he already is. That's a good point.
Yeah. And our next segue, Oklahoma, not as stable as they used to be, potentially.
Yeah, Oklahoma went from easily the favorite coming into the season. I think they probably still are. But it's a weird offseason. We talked about it a little before. What made Bob Stoops leave? I love Lincoln Riley, but I don't know if I'd want him as my head coach right away when Bob Stoops exits in the middle of the offseason. Will anyone dethrone them? They're the favorite heading in, but Texas is making some noise. West Virginia is okay. Oklahoma State returns some superstar offensive players. Is that enough to dethrone Oklahoma, or is Lincoln Riley going to win a conference championship his first year?
It's going to be really interesting because I think Oklahoma State can score with them. I think point for point they can score with them. Oklahoma does return 15 starters. Bob Stoops was probably going to have the number 5th, number 6th ranked team in the country coming back. We know Baker Mayfield stat-wise what he'll do. It's going to be really interesting to watch if Lincoln Riley changes anything. It was his offense, no doubt, but if they're going to make any changes defensively. Bob Stoops' brother Mike is still there, so that could be an interesting dynamic. I mean, there's talent defensively, but they're replacing their whole starting front four. They've got the secondary guys. Their linebackers have struggled in the last couple of years. Offensively, they're going to score points. I think you and I both agree. Don't think that's going to be an issue. But I think what can Lincoln Riley, is he going to change anything defensively? Will it matter? That's going to be the big question because Oklahoma State, this should be Mike Gundy's probably his best or second best team.
Yeah, like Baker Mayfield. So OSU or Oklahoma last year played Ohio State, got handled pretty easily. And then from that point on, they haven't lost a game. Baker Mayfield had 39 touchdowns to 6 interceptions after that Ohio State game on. They really turned it up. They lost a lot in the run game, but we know Lincoln Riley can produce offense. I think they actually have a pretty good defense. They have one really, really good corner. They have a young defensive tackle who's going to be good. I don't know if this is the year where Herman early on or Gundy can swoop in. The way they have their schedule set up, and we'll talk about this in a second, they essentially play a round robin, and they play every other team in the conference, correct?
Yeah, they play 9 games, and then they'll have a championship game this year for the first time.
So it's almost a question of, and it doesn't have to be in this exact chronological order, but when you think about this, is there a team that's good enough to beat Oklahoma twice? And they're not going to have to because they just have to get to that game. But do you think there's a team that could beat Oklahoma twice?
I still think Oklahoma State can beat them. I really do. I think it's a two-man race this year. I think Texas isn't quite there yet in terms of the depth. I think next year is going to be the year for Texas. I want to see how Herman does. But I think Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, I think it's a two-man race with Kansas State lurking and Bill Snyder lurking there. But I think Oklahoma State, I think, can. It's just, can Oklahoma State find enough of a pass rush to get to Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, like you have to just get that guy down. And, I mean, as much as he annoys us, especially with what he did to us when we played him head-to-head, he's really, really, really good. And obviously he has a good rapport with Riley. It can't be underrated that they lost P. Ryan and Mixon. I mean, that was a lot of production. But they also still have Orlando Brown on the line. They still have they also lost a wide receiver as well, who D.D. Westbrook. So they have a lot definitely to replace, but they keep Baker Mayfield, and he's a dynamic player, and there's no way around that. I think Oklahoma State could not only like sneak in and beat them in a title game, but they might be good enough to beat them twice. And I'm not saying they will. It's not a prediction. But they last year, they were a little bit better than their final record indicated because they had that game that they actually won that the ref made that horrible call.
Michigan. Yeah.
The Hail Mary game. So they were really good, and they pretty much returned everyone. They have maybe the best wide receiver in the country, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. They have a stretch where they play at Texas, at West Virginia, Oklahoma, Iowa State, and Kansas State. That's all in a row. So if they make it out of that and still get in the title game, I think they can beat Oklahoma. It's not a prediction, but I think they can.
Yeah, they got to go at Texas, at West Virginia, Oklahoma, at Iowa State, and Kansas State.
That's a for real stretch right there.
It really is. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. I think it's Oklahoma, Oklahoma State for the Big 12 title game. I really do. I think that's going to be the matchup that we're going to see for the title game.
So, given that they have a title game now, are you okay with that? Are you okay with these changes? Do you like the no divisions round robin and a title game, or would you prefer there's no title game? How would you like this setup to be?
See, I'm old school. At least I would. I don't like the conference title games, honestly. I mean, I know why they're there. It's not too. I'm more against it in basketball. I hate the college. I watch them, but I think the conference basketball tournaments are kind of unfair. This one's a little more fair, so I'm not as against it. But I definitely think they should add 12. I think it's kind of, I mean, it's going to be really weird with tiebreakers. You know, if they stay at 10, sometime in the next 5 years, there's going to be a weird tiebreaker, and everyone's going to get pissed about it.
Yeah, it's going to be the talk, and there's going to be some weird way that someone gets in the actual title game. I sort of like the idea of like there's a guaranteed rematch in that title game. That sort of adds intrigue. But I also kind of dislike the idea of like you could beat the hell out of this team in the regular season and then they could squeak one out in the title game and suddenly they're the conference champions. Like that would be really annoying. I don't like that idea. But as far as just at the beginning of the year, you know that there's going to be a rematch from two pretty storied programs. I like that idea. If they were going to grow, if they were going to add teams and get to 12 again, who do you think they should add? Who would you want them to add? Who would make sense?
okay, so the logical makes sense, should happen, is BYU.
Right.
They're close enough in Utah. It's a draw. It's, I mean, it's a ways away, but they're close enough. The geological fit there. They've got a big name, a big brand. It makes a lot of sense there for BYU.
So if we're picking two, I had BYU written down, partly because it's been whispered about so much and because people, that's a brand already. And then aside from that, I think a team like South Florida would be nice. They you know, they'll recruit Florida. They're actually ranked this year. They'll be really good. If Strong sticks there, that adds some intrigue. That's not why you add a team to a conference, but that'd be cool. I think South Florida and BYU kind of on opposite sides, that would make a lot of sense.
I could see that. Cincinnati makes sense. Their football program's a little bit down. I really like the Luke Finkel hire, though, actually. We didn't really talk about that, but I think he's a good coach. I think he could have success there. So I think Cincinnati would be an option. If it was NCAA football custom conference mode, I would do what I'd always do, and I'd ship Texas A&M back to the Big 12 because that's where they should be.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Given all the talk about – like it seemed for a while like they had the teams nailed down and they were about to make these moves, and then it didn't happen. Do you think the Big 12 is around in 3-4 years? Do you think that there's a huge realignment that eliminates them? Do you think they become one of these big super conferences with a lot of teams? How do you see this shaking out?
So I think there's two options that will happen. I don't think it's going to happen next few years. I think they're stable enough, they'll be okay. But there's two options. One, excuse me. One, the Pac-12 steals everything. They steal Oklahoma, Texas, Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. And then add like a BYU or something. And then the other teams just become like a power five, a group of five conference, Kansas State, Texas Tech, teams like those. Okay. I think would become like power, like a group of five. The other one I could see happening in terms of like disbanding is I could see them joining a conference that's lower, like a lower conference, like the American Conference, and combining as a super conference. Add Houston, South Florida. Maybe they could steal Notre Dame, something like that.
Yeah, I think – I wouldn't surprise me if eventually there is some sort of like – there are just three or four big conferences, and those are kind of just who runs things, and they have a lot of power, but they have all the big schools there. There's nobody who's on the outside with a TV contract or anything, and that's who runs things. But I also think that trying to predict what's going to happen with this stuff is tough because everyone seemed 100% certain they knew what the Big 12 was going to do, and that has not come to fruition at all.
No, I think in the next 5 years, my personal prediction is BYU and Houston will join the conference, especially if Major Applewhite can continue the success that Tom Herman has. I think that's what's going to happen.
That would make a lot of sense. Back to the Big 12 in its current state. We did this with the Big 10. We're going to do it with the Big 12 as well and the other conferences we preview. Again, stream of consciousness, guys you like. Who are your favorite players going into this season?
One of my favorites, big Kyle Hicks fan from TCU. Really leading receiver coming back, leading rusher, 1,500 yards, total yards. Really like watching him play, very shifty. He's a really good back, really provides Gary Patterson a spark there. I really enjoy watching him play.
Yeah, he's really, really good. Again, like you said, he averaged 5.1 yards a carry, but he also caught almost 50 balls out of the backfield. I like him a lot. You and I have kind of been on him since he started to emerge in that role. I always like following our guys for a little while. A guy that I've really liked for a long time is James Washington, and he went even higher last year. So he started to catch some touchdowns as a freshman, got to double-digit touchdowns as a sophomore, and then he was more in like it was a bigger part of the offense last year. He got a couple touches in the run game, but mostly he averaged almost 20 yards a catch and caught 71 balls. Still just 10 touchdowns, but I think he's one of the best wide receivers in the country. He's sort of a tweener where he's not gigantic and he's not a slot receiver, so it's going to be interesting to see what the NFL thinks. and especially given the offense he comes from, but he's physical. If he gets a step on you, he's gone. And he and Mason Rudolph have a really good rapport together.
The guy that I really enjoyed looking up, who I really honestly had barely heard of, Dorrance Armstrong from Kansas, had a huge year last year, had over 10 sacks. He's really explosive. He's really fun to watch. And he just doesn't get any pub because Texas is the worst Power 5 team in the country. But he is really fun.
Yeah, he's also one that when I started looking at like draft lists and stuff, people list him as a guy who could be like an ideal 3-4 outside linebacker because he's big enough, he's got long arms, and he can just – he has that pass rush gene where he can just get pressure anytime, even when he's not surrounded by tons of talent at Kansas.
Yeah, he had 10 sacks, and then he had 10 tackles for loss last year. Like, those are really good numbers in a pass-happy Big 12, yes, but still, really impressive. Also, I really like Jordan Thomas. I like watching him from Oklahoma. Physical corner, can play kind of in the box. I really enjoy watching him. And I think the other wide receiver from Oklahoma State, Jalen McCleskey, can play. He's a baller.
Oh, I like him. I like him a lot.
He's J.J. McCleskey's kid, former Tennessee wideout. Tennessee missed on him, didn't recruit him. But he's really balled out.
Yeah, he had more catches than Washington last year. Washington was just way more explosive. But McCleskey's really good. I've been on Mason Rudolph for a few years, and I really hoped he would just run with that job, and he really has. He's become an absolute star. I drafted him. For anyone who didn't listen to our draft episode, he's my quarterback on the team I drafted. I've been pushing that for a while. I love him. As far as the young guns that we talked about in the Big Ten, we'll talk about him here as well. Who's your favorite new recruit or a favorite underclassman in the Big 12 that you think either – needs some pub or is going to continue to have monster production or might burst onto the scene this year?
The guy I really am interested to see, he's from Texas. I'm really excited to see Damian Miller, the wide receiver from Tyler. I think he could really have a big year. They need to replace their wideout production. Their leading receiver was Armonte Foreman. He only had 34 catches. So I think Damian Miller could really provide a spark for Texas next year.
I actually picked another Texas wide receiver in Devin DuVernay, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing that exactly correctly, but he's a sophomore.
Close enough.
Yeah, he's another one that can help them be more explosive like we've seen some of those Tom Herman offenses. He was one that I think was a Baylor commit and maybe even signed a letter of intent, and then when all the Baylor stuff went down, he was able to switch, and he's going to Texas now. When he has played, he averaged over 20 yards a catch, which is gigantic. That's what Texas needs. They need to constantly be explosive. So I think he'll produce. And then Justice Hill, the Oklahoma State running back, as a freshman last year, had over 1,100 yards and 5.5 yards a carry. We know that it's like a spread out offense and he has all the room in the world to run. But it's going to be the same this year. They still have Rudolph. They still have Washington. They still have McCleskey. Justin Hill as a sophomore, you can probably expect more of the same. I expect probably a little bit more rush yards, probably some more touchdowns. He and Rudolph can run a little bit of read option. So, I mean, you can say all you want that it's a spread out offense, but everybody and the key pieces are still there. So I think he'll continue to produce.
How about Kyler Murray, number one quarterback recruit in the country in 2015? It'll be really interesting to see him. You know, he's not going to start, obviously, at Oklahoma after transferring from Texas A&M, but I definitely feel like he's going to see some packages, see some plays. Be really interesting to watch him.
Yeah, he's another one. And then another one, that this was the name that escaped me earlier when I was talking about Oklahoma. They have Neville Gallimore, who coming out of high school was a four-star recruit. He was in the top 100. He's a big kid, and he's a sophomore this year. As a freshman, he had 40 tackles. He had 4 tackles for loss from the defensive tackle position. So just young talent on that Oklahoma defense that could help them stay the course after Bob Stoops is gone. And I think Gallimore, I remember his name getting called some last year. I don't know which game it was, but he's already produced a little bit, and he's a big kid. He's 6'2", over 310 pounds.
Also, even though I don't watch the show, he sounds like a Game of Thrones character, so that's pretty cool also. I think it's time to pick the Big 12 winner. Is that correct, Daniel?
It is. I think it's got to be. We've beat around the bush enough.
All right. I'll start. How about this? I'm going to go upset. I think Oklahoma State wins the conference.
I'm going to pick Oklahoma State as well.
Oh, but damn it, Daniel. Oh, jeez. We were supposed to be different.
You know how much I love them, though.
I know. You love Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, I could absolutely make the case that Baker Mayfield is just – he's that dude. He's that good. Nobody's going to dethrone him. But I think Gundy has these guys back. And I think if he had lost Washington or if he had lost Rudolph and he was really trying to just recover from that, it would be tough. But I think maybe they can. Oklahoma returned 16 starters or 15 or 16. They still have a good defense. But if anybody's going to score on that defense and keep up, you said it, Oklahoma State can score with them. And when Oklahoma State can score with them, Rudolph can make almost as many plays as a guy like Baker Mayfield. They have a great running back, and Oklahoma's still going to be looking for one. I think they can hang. And since the Bedlam game is earlier in the season this year, if they – match up in that week with the championship games, I think that's going to be one of the most exciting games of the year. It's going to be a rematch, and I think Oklahoma State can win one of those. It's just a matter of if it's the right one.
I'm going to do this again, and I do it every year, but TCU does return 16 starters.
So what did they end up doing last year?
It wasn't pretty. They went 6-7.
Yeah.
And had... did not have a good – they had a horrible turnover margin. Like, they were 90th in the country. They had a couple
– there could be some luck involved, but some bad luck involved there.
Yeah, and they – I mean, they got blown out by Kansas State and Oklahoma State. They played Oklahoma real close, but the West Virginia got them too. But, I mean, I think they can win. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. Don't get me wrong, but maybe if Lincoln Riley falters and Oklahoma State's defense, they can't find the production, maybe TCU can sneak in there. And then you can't count out Kansas State. They've got a lot of returning starters also. You know, they've got 13 returning starters. They've got their quarterback coming back in Jesse Ertz, who's probably their best quarterback they've had in a long time. I think he's almost – I mean, they had Klein, who was really good. But it feels like Kansas State might be able to make a run. They did go 8-4 last year.
Yeah, and they're going to be able to run the ball really well. One thing I like about Oklahoma State is you go down their line, offensive line, and it's senior, sophomore, senior, redshirt, senior, redshirt, senior. So they have a lot of experience. It's one of those where if not this year, when are they going to do it? Because they lose almost their whole line. They lose a lot of their secondary. They lose Washington. They lose Rudolph. So they have the experience now. It's going to disappear soon. So if someone's going to dethrone Oklahoma, it's got to be this year. Because if Mayfield gets it rolling, he's got the quarterbacks in place beyond mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield, and they're going to be really good for a long time.
Yeah, this is the year Mike Gundy needs to make the move. And, you know, with the new coach, maybe he can become, you know, the king. I know Tom Herman's at Texas, but this is the year for Oklahoma State to make a move and win the conference.
It really is. And if he doesn't, the conversation around that's going to be huge. So we've picked conference winners. We picked Oklahoma State. We both picked Ohio State earlier. The one we differed on for the ACC, I picked Clemson and you picked?
I picked Florida State.
So we've got some kind of conversation started around what the playoff teams will look like. We'll learn a little bit early in the season because Michigan plays Florida. Oklahoma State plays on, I think, Thursday night, but I don't think they play anybody very good. But we're going to start to learn a little bit really early on. Second week of the season, Oklahoma, who is still the favorite here, plays at Columbus. And so that we're going to learn a lot in that game. We're going to see what Lincoln Riley's made of. This just gets me more excited for the season. Maybe we'll disagree when we preview the SEC and the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think we will disagree with the Pac-12. I think we'll have different answers there. I'm also proud of us. This is the first time we've ever said we're going to stick with the time limit, and we actually hit the time limit. Yes.
Yeah. This is another episode that will release this week, and the one you should expect after this is an SEC preview. And then because we roped you in with the SEC, we're going to do a Pac-12 preview as well. Think about the other coast a little bit. Talk about some of the superstars they have out there.
I think this is going to be, man, college football so close, Daniel. We got one more recording, and then we got college football coming up. I'm super excited, and I think this is going to be one of the more fun college football years. So many different storylines.
So episode 4 in the books, and we'll come soon with episode 5. It should be released later this week. Thank you guys for listening.
Thanks, guys.